Hi, I'm Taboo.
And I'm Church.
And we are the Dark Souls 2.
And welcome to the Dark Souls 2. This episode, we're covering the Upper Lost Bastille.
Sinner's Rise.
And Belfry Luna.
Yeah.
So, we have a few announcements.
We do. So, firstly, perhaps most importantly to my mind.
I wouldn't say importantly. I'd say friggin' most excitingly. I'm trying to hold back. I don't know. Should I be excited?
Yes, you should. We should all be bloody excited because there's a thing called Project Beast. And Project Beast is a working title for what a lot of people believe is Demon's Souls 2. And it's leaked. It's not confirmed. It's not official. It was leaked by 4chan. So if you want to trust that, you know, it's a matter for you. But if you look at the pictures, which we will link dump, there's not much room to argue that it's faked. A lot of effort would have got into it.
Yeah, there's too many screenshots. I could understand if a screenshot came out for a new game or something like that, and there was one screenshot, and they're like, hey, look, this is a screenshot from the new game. You're like, some art student could maybe have knocked that up over the weekend. But there's like 10 screenshots, all definitely stick to a very specific theme. They all look very dark/Demon's Souls inspired. They all look like they've come out of the engine, albeit a lot nicer. There's a screenshot of like a fog door, which is how you can tell it's definitely going to be something Souls environment.
Absolutely.
Or Souls universe.
But the graphics on that fog door, for instance, are phenomenal.
Yeah.
They look really good. And some of the screenshots are kind of low quality, so you can't tell whether the graphics are good or not. But just, for instance, that one shot really highlights the fact that this is kind of like a next-gen game and it looks really good, whatever it is.
So what do we know? Okay. Screenshots leaked on 4chan. That alone should make you guys go, well, that sounds pretty spurious at best. But I have been trying to hold back my excitement because, hey, you know, it's a next game in the series announced literally months or weeks after the most recent iteration of the series has come out. It just felt a bit
too
soon.
Where do they get the time?
Yeah.
Maybe the guy that's supposed to take down from the server updates thing, you know, on the 11th of April, maybe that guy's been working on this and that's why I can't get other shit done.
Hey, Bob, come on. We need you for a more important project. Just do it on weekends.
It'll take 5 minutes, man. Come on, just do it.
But, on that note, how have they been working on it, you asked? That's part of some of the things that I've been... Well, I've gone out and done my research. As I was saying, I've been trying to hold back my excitement, but it's hard because aside from it being from 4chan, there's actually a lot to suggest that it probably is legitimate. For starters, the whole Project Beast thing. The working title for Dark Souls was Project Dark. So they're speculating that this is going to be, Beast Souls, I guess, because we've had Demons Souls.
Oh, you wouldn't call it Beast. I suppose you
well,
could.
Well, yeah. All of the you actually pick up Beast Souls in Demons Souls. That was one of the things that you would pick up in the game from the bosses, I understand it. But nonetheless, somebody, I forget, I'll try and credit in the show notes because it is important, but some important Souls YouTuber has actually noted that at the end of Dark Souls 2, if you go through the credits and you go through the credits at the end of Dark Souls 1, you notice that a lot of the higher-ups for the team that made the game are vacant in Dark Souls 2. And so people are like, why would they take their most important people? Nobody was announced as being fired or anything like that. Why would they take the people that were most important in making Dark Souls 1 off the team for Dark Souls 2? And so people are speculating, maybe they're working on a more important project. Just too many coincidences. There was another guy that is commenting on forums, and it's been pretty much confirmed in the past that this guy works for Sony. I don't think it's ever been officially announced, but something's occurred in the past through his chat history on the forums. You can tell that he clearly works for Sony. Then people have dug through his comment history, and for example, I think one of the comments was, you know, say a year ago or something, referring to one of the big gaming conventions, possibly E3 for 2013. And he said, somebody asked him, you know, is there going to be any big announcements regarding the Namco Bandai universe or whatever? And he said something like, oh, not much, but what we are going to announce is going to be Beastly or something like that.
Oh.
And so they're just little things all put together, it's forming a pretty strong picture. And so, I don't know, I'm starting to lean in the camp that this is happening.
I've always thought it was quite legit from the moment that you first told me about this one. And obviously something's going on. And obviously, you know, you call it Project Beast, and knowing all of that, if you're going to fake it, then that's probably what you'd call it.
But, sure.
But I don't think it's fake. I think it's legit. I think it's interesting that it got leaked. I'd like to know why the person chose to leak it to 4chan of all places.
Yeah, it's not uncommon.
But
why I made why that, you did that.
I don't know why I did that either. That's my opinion of leaking things to 4chan. A lot of people are speculating about this shotgun thing. You know, there's one of
So in one of the screenshots. Okay, so the feel that you get from the game is it definitely feels a bit more demon-y than darky. And one of the screenshots, the main character, it looks more future. It sort of has a kind of Van Helsing sort of a feel. It's a little bit near in the future, say maybe like the 1300s, 1400s. The attire sort of feels to match like that. It's less medieval. And there's a screenshot that's quite blurry, and people are saying it looks like he has a shotgun in his hand. You disagree?
Yeah, I don't think it quite looks like a shotgun. I mean, I think it does, but I don't think it's conclusive anyway, one way or the other.
Sure.
And also the way he holds it, he's holding it kind of like on the stock towards the butt end of the gun. Why? Why isn't he holding it like you would hold a shotgun? I think it's more likely a club or a shovel or, but who knows? I mean, it might be a shotgun.
Look, you can make up your own mind when you see the screenshots in the show notes. But if it is a shotgun, people are like, that doesn't feel like it matches the universe.
Yeah, I don't
like
that.
Why not? If it is a more futuristic kind of era, why couldn't it take the place of, say, a Catalyst?
It's just a different type of game. It's just different.
I guess. But yeah, look, I could trust that they could make it work. Now, here's the wrinkle, though. Demon's Souls is a Sony IP, which means that Sony hold the rights to that title,
mm-hmm.
which is how Dark Souls branched off from Demon's Souls and was able to release on Xbox and PC. If this is Demon's Souls 2, which the evidence is starting to strongly point towards, then it's going to be a PS4 exclusive. If you're believing what you're reading to this point, then the next strong rumor is, yeah, it's going to be a PS4 exclusive, which, to be honest, is probably what the PS4 needs. A game as successful in the series as Dark Souls, mm-hmm. to sort of push it into the next generation with a game that is exclusive, that people want, that is going to push some sales for the PS4.
And of course, it's always possible that money changes hands and it ceases to be exclusive intellectual property of Sony, but
it would need to be big money because Sony need that at the moment. They need that exclusive that's going to draw people to buy their console because, let's face it, the next-gen consoles haven't been
exceedingly
good. Sony's been doing the best out of the lot, mm-hmm. to my understanding, but yeah.
There's no massive draw card games, are there? Really?
But we should probably move on anyway because we're not a general gaming podcast. We're a Dark Souls podcast.
So, speaking of Dark Souls, which is probably a good idea right about now, the Farfire.
I hope so.
The Farfire stats site.
Yeah, farfire.darksoulsii.com.
So, that looks like Dark Souls-y.
Yeah, as you said, stats site. Bandai Namco run this site, and it's coming up on that notice that Bob hasn't taken down for the last 2 months for when you log into the game.
Yep.
And it points to this website, and basically it's a website that holds a lot of information about the game, patch notes, server statuses, whether things are online or offline.
Mm.
But it also holds a lot of interesting stats. It's got a lot there.
I mean, one of the most interesting things is what percentage of people are human in, you know, for a particular
any point
console.
In time.
Yeah.
And it seems to update regularly. I checked earlier today, and for the PS3, 61% of players were human, which seemed huge to me.
Yeah, I was quite surprised. But then when I saw it a little bit later on, it was 62% of people were human. So Obviously there's some kind of variance there.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to bear in mind, this is nice, and I'm glad they did it, but it's nothing revolutionary. Battle.net was giving people stats on their games.
Yeah, sure. And a decade ago. It's not personal stats, unfortunately. That's what I would like to have seen.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's giving you cool stuff like the most used weapon in the swords class or the most used helm or the top three shields and this kind of rubbish. So for those that love stats, it's a bit of an interesting thing to flick through for a bit. One of the cool things that I noticed was on the last page, it tells you how many people are doing co-op and how many people are doing PvP in each area. And so you can sort of pick out, you know, Hades Tower of Flame seems to be the most popular PvP area at the moment, whereas Dranglake Castle seems to be the most popular co-op area at the moment. Just little things like that.
Yeah, interesting.
Very interesting.
I suppose that leaving that aside, there's also the other big, huge, massive news of the acquisition of From Software.
Yeah, by Kadokawa.
Kadokawa.
But unfortunately, I think we've got so much to cover this week. We'll probably save that discussion for next week.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on. Before we kick off, I suppose we make a mention of the updates to our website real quick.
Yeah, we've been getting really good feedback for this podcast, and we really appreciate that. I couldn't count the number of times I've said to our fans that if it weren't for you guys and us getting this sort of feedback, we would have given up six episodes ago. We just wouldn't be doing this if it weren't for you guys listening.
Right. So along those lines, there is a little alteration to our website, which we notice a little carousel on the side, and it advertises on Amazon a bunch of merchandise. You know, if you like us and you're just in the universe, then the cloth map seems interesting to you, and obviously the earlier games as well. So if you think about purchasing those things, there's a way to grab them. It doesn't cost you anything extra, but it provides a little bit of revenue to us, which might cover our server costs and all that kind of jazz if we do draw any revenue from it. So we're not bombing you out with ads. We're not, you know, begging you for money. We're just saying if you are going to buy that stuff, that's a good way to do it, which kind of shows some support for the podcast.
Yeah, and we'd really appreciate that. We've got copies for every game for each console and even things like guidebooks and that kind of stuff. So have a look.
Mm.
If anything takes fancy, great.
For those of you that haven't seen it as yet, the Dark Souls 2 guidebook is amazing.
Yeah, it's been an invaluable resource for what we've been doing here. It's just so nice having a piece of paper that I can actually refer back to, you know, as I'm writing these notes, because let's face it, me writing these notes isn't a quick thing each week. It takes a bit of involvement, and so having that resource on hand at all times is just exceptional.
Beautiful. So shall we move on to tips?
Actually, I've had a topic that I've wanted to raise for some weeks now, and each time I write the notes, I feel like we're going to go massively over time. So I haven't had the opportunity to bring it up. This episode, we've got a lot to cover, but I feel like I can maybe squeeze in quickly. It's about the Lord Vessel.
Okay. Obviously, Lord Vessel being an item from Dark Souls 1.
Yes. And I'm kind of blindsiding you a bit here because you're not as prepared as I am for this topic.
Just so that we're clear, Taboo has deliberately kept me in the dark about this, has asked me to keep myself blinded to it so that he can introduce it to me now.
Because it's something that I found so freaking awesome, and I wanted to share that with someone and see what you thought.
Okay. I'm excited. All right, let's do it.
Okay, so we all know what the Lord Vessel is, those of us that played Dark Souls 1. For those that didn't, it's an incredibly important item for the previous game.
Yeah.
Basically, it's an item that you get given about probably, what, two-thirds, three-quarters through the game?
Yes.
And it changes the way you play the game from that point on. For those that are going to go back and play Dark Souls 1, we won't go into it too much further. But as I said, incredibly important item. What would you say if I told you the Lord Vessel is in Dark Souls 2?
Oh, wow. But where? Like, really?
So, you've actually seen it already.
I'm trying to think.
In Majula, there is a little house that Kale resides in. And in Kale's house, there is a staircase that leads underneath the map room, and there's a skeleton in there. On the floor are fragments of an item, a broken item. Some clever folk, more intelligent than I...
What's your language?
...has been able to take screenshots and zoom in on the details of the broken items or fragments across the floor and compare the patterns on the side of them to that on the Lord Vessel.
Oh, my God. Okay, so that explains what that whole friggin' room is for.
Does it?
Well, because you go down there and Kale's like, oh, my God, it's so scary. You know, you got to be careful. And you go down there and you fight this one skelly and you're like, what's going on down here? Nothing.
So somehow the Lord Vessel has appeared in Dranglake. And it's ended up under the house somehow and been busted up somehow. And that raises a lot of questions, as you can imagine.
Yeah, some clumsy folk has dropped it and broken it.
Well, I've actually read some theories and, you know, mixed and matched and come up with some of my own and all the rest. And I think it's incredibly exciting. I don't know that anybody knows at the moment how it could be there, but a few of my favorite theories are, well, we know the Lord Vessel is for the soul of the lords, the big lords from Dark Souls 1. You kill them and you put their souls into the vessel to progress to the last area of the game.
You said you weren't going to spoil it, and then you spoiled it. you dick. No, I don't know.
I think it's a bit more important than that, and I won't go into the other dynamics
of it.
Yeah,
but okay.
Why are you making me feel bad?
No, it's not. Look, I didn't make you feel bad. You made you feel bad. Anyway.
Okay, so this is a vessel where you store the Lord's souls, or potentially it could be a vessel for the Lords to travel by, which raises some questions about how you can quick travel in this game from bonfire to bonfire. I mean, could that have something to do with it? Somebody has speculated that maybe some of the fragments have been dropped into each bonfire to make them linked in that way so you can travel between
them. Well, no, you ruined the other bit.
Yeah.
You are shit at this.
If you haven't played Dark Souls 1, it's your own damn fault by now. You're right. I shouldn't have said anything about spoilers before because I've ruined it all.
Yeah, look, that's all right. You know, someone will get angry, come and ruin you. But
probably.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's some interesting speculation. I mean, obviously, that's one of the most striking features about this game, and the way it's different to the previous game is the bonfires are used for quick traveling. And why is it so different? There should be a lore answer to that. There generally is in the Souls universe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's it.
So, one of the theories that I've been reading and trying to flesh out myself is, this is my personal favorite. I don't know that there's a lot to support it, but it's so cool that I couldn't avoid it. So the theory is that the Lord Vessel in Dark Souls 2 is actually a different one to the Lord Vessel in Dark Souls 1, and they're actually linked somehow. And things that you put into the Lord Vessel in Dark Souls 1 transports them into the Lord Vessel in Dark Souls 2.
Which would explain a big lore implication of Dark Souls 2.
About how some souls have potentially made it into the Dark Souls 2 universe, which we're going to expand on a bit later on this episode and later episodes.
That is, well, you know, because there's a question about chronology within the Souls universe, right? Dranglake, it seems, exists after Lordran. And there's suggestions they occupy the same land or some such thing. But perhaps they don't necessarily need to. Perhaps they're in entirely different dimensions.
It goes deeper. Stick with me on this one. So, two Lord Vessels somehow joined. And what we know is in the last game, Guinevere is who gives you the Lord Vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And if Guinevere gives you the Lord Vessel in the last game, then it actually means Gwyndolin is the one that owned the Lord Vessel.
Yes, because Guinevere was a hologram created by Gwyndolin.
Correct. So we know that Gwyndolin knows that Lordran is on the way out. His father, Gwyn, isn't able to keep the last flame lit much longer. So he knows Lordran is on the way down the Gurgler. And we also establish by the end of the game that Gwyndolin, Frampt, and Karth have all deceived you at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So the theory goes that they could be working together to get the Chosen Undead to do their bidding.
Frampt and Karth working together?
Karth and Frampt give you the illusion of choice. So they try to push you along this path to get to the last flame by filling the Lord Vessel with souls. One of them wants you to keep the last flame lit. The other one wants you to put it out. And they're giving you this sort of illusion of choice and convincing you that you need to get to this last flame. And they go and put up this barrier between you and that goal, this door to the kiln of the final flame.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you that the only way you can get there is by filling this Lord Vessel with the strongest souls of this universe.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go out and kill these lords and put their souls into this Lord Vessel. Now, I'm speculating that Gwyndolin, knowing that Lordran is on the way out, and we know that some of the other gods have already fled Anor Londo.
Fled.
Potentially, Guinevere has fled Anor Londo to head to the land. U.S. Guinevere has potentially fled Anor Londo to make it to the land of Dranglake. And Gwyndolin is supplying her with the strongest souls of his realm to help her start anew in Dranglake, which could potentially explain why Hyatt's Tower of Flame seems to be such an homage that it's potentially been built by Guinevere. So Karth and Frampt are involved because they win either way. They're going to survive. We've already said that. They're immortal.
They're immortal, yes.
They don't give a shit, really. Why should they, whether the flame is lit or not? They're giving you that illusion of choice to give you the urge to carry on. But what they win is the entire realm of Lordran, because you've taken out all of the strongest lords.
Oh.
They have no more competition. They have this entire realm that's now theirs. Gwyndolin has sacrificed himself to allow his sister to start again in a new realm. And we have now built this Dranglake from these most important souls from the previous area.
So there's a broken pot on the ground, and therefore the whole first game was a lie, and the lore isn't the way we think it is, and all the characters were lying to you, and
Well, we already know what the characters are lying to you, and I know what you're getting.
But they were lying to you in a different way because someone dropped something.
Not necessarily. Well, that's the part that I haven't been able to explain yet.
I mean, that's an amazing theory. Like, that is hella tight.
Right? I read it, and I was just like, wow, this is awesome, which is why I had to present it. I don't know.
I like it.
You like it?
Yeah, that's good.
You don't seem like you like it.
No, look, it's fine. Don't allow my smile and me telling you that I like it to deceive you. I actually do like it.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about deceiving from playing this game.
Yeah, well, look, I like that. I think that's cool. I like people. You know, this is the coolest thing about this community, you know. People come up with these ideas and then we read them and parrot them to people as if they were ours.
Pretty much. That's how that happened.
Yep. Aren't we clever?
So, moving right along to tips.
So, I got a correction, actually. Last time we said that dual handing will add 1.5 times your strength, which doesn't make mathematical sense, does it? When you hold the sword with one hand, you get one unit of strength. So when you hold the sword with two hands, you should get two units of strength. And actually, that's what happens.
Yeah. So I was completely wrong. I was off the mark. I'm actually embarrassed that I left it in. I stumbled over the difference between dual handing and dual wielding and two handing and all of this, and it all just fell apart. It was a terrible tip. So the long and short is...
saggy and...
holding a weapon with two hands doubles your strength.
Yeah.
Now, we had a few tips sent in by listeners, which is great.
Yeah, so Sean and Ian both mentioned that the door to nowhere in the Lower Bastille, you know, that you open the door and there's nothing there. Actually, what you can do is you can jump from above, and if you aim it very, very well, you can land in that door if you've opened it. So actually opening that door is the opening of a shortcut, which you can come back to later.
Which I looked at from multiple different angles, and I thought, only a friggin' idiot would try and make that jump.
Yeah, so Sean and Ian are smart, and you are stupid.
I don't know. I think I just called them friggin' idiots, didn't I? Because they tried to make the jump.
Yeah, but it worked.
So the advantage of that is you get to skip that section up the top where you open the big iron door and you get mobbed by five swordsmen. So that's nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
You only have to deal with two.
Did you ever play Ocarina of Time?
I did.
Did you ever finish Ocarina of Time?
I did not.
Oh, my God. You know, in the final fight, you've got Ganon floating in the middle, Ganondorf, and he's shooting...
Dude, come on, spoilers.
Shut up, dickhead. This game came out in, like, 1993 or something. So he's shooting spells at you, and you've got to knock him back with the Master Sword, and they whack into him, and he falls down. You run up and chop him a bit.
I've seen that, yes.
Yeah, so what you can do instead is use, like, a bottle. You get the bottle, and you make the catching action you use to catch fairies and stuff when the butterflies in the bottle, and that catching action knocks the spell back to him, and you can beat him with the bottle.
Okay.
Which is interesting, right? And you can do that in Dark Souls as well. You know, someone throws an item at you or shoots a spell at you, you can knock it out of the air with your shield, your parry of the shield. Yeah, you can do that. It's cool.
Yeah, so that was a tip sent in by...
Brian. Yeah. I don't know why he paused there.
I was reading.
How long does it take to read Brian? It's one word. Jesus. All right. Chris also said that when you get a weapon... what you ought to do, this is an amazingly good tip, Chris, you are a genius, is run through all the different move sets. So two-hand the weapon and see what it looks like to use it. Because, you know...
strong, weak.
Yeah, exactly.
Jump, roll, step back.
Because we all know sometimes there are situations with a weapon that are not ideal. You know, like if you've got a sword that swings side to side and you're in a corridor, you're going to get screwed. But if you explore the full move set, you'll find that sometimes there are options with that weapon that fit different circumstances. So, you know, when you're in a tight space, maybe you need to dual wield it or two hand it.
Yeah, and that way it might give you like a poking action instead of a large frontal swinging action.
Yeah, I just like a poking action when I'm two handing it. But
and
that's the noise I make as well.
My final tip is you can actually scale and move tattoos. This might be going back to our second episode where I think we mentioned that tattoos are stupid and you just end up with this big goofy thing on your
and
face.
And the ability to move and scale them doesn't make them any less freaking stupid.
Well, actually, I've been able to do some pretty cool things. I was able to... So the option to do this is in the advance screen as you're making your character. And you choose your tattoo and I was able to like take one of these dragon ones, which is like this tribal display. Tattoo.
Okay.
Tribal style.
The whole time.
And I was
time,
able to, like,
the whole
rotate
time,
it and move it over my face and make it bigger, and it looks really cool, like war paint.
He was just gesticulating wildly to his own face just then.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's enough of that. Keep sending your tips in, because as you saw, those tips were quite high quality, and a lot of them came from our listeners. So, the Upper Lost Bastille.
Belfry Luna and Sinner's Rise.
Yeah, but first, the Upper Lost Bastille.
Well, actually, the Servant's Bonfire.
Yeah, which is in...
the Upper Lost Bastille.
Yeah, there you go.
No, glad we're on the same page of the notes now. Yeah, so where we left off last episode, we're in the servants' quarters bonfire.
Yes, so this is like a big expansive room. It seems like it's kind of like an... If it's the servants' quarters, obviously it's like an eating area or some kind of mess hall.
Yeah, it's got some tables, looks like somewhere that they'd eat. But you've got two options from here. You can either go straight forward and out a door, which we'll cover in a little bit, because the other option is to go left and down a hole.
That's the hole to Belfry Luna.
Belfriel.
Belfriel. Yeah, the lost Belfriel. Yeah, so down the hole, and you end up in a little room with general supplies and a doge. There's also a large club on a corpse, which is a decent weapon, I think.
Yeah, it was actually my favorite weapon with my first character for a long time. I did eventually upgrade to the giant club. But the large club stuck with me for a while because I was going a strength-only build, and it has A scaling. Now, these clubby, hammery, BT-type weapons are excellent for guard-breaking and enemies that are heavily armored, which just so happens to be a lot of the, at least the early on bosses. You know, the Flexel Sentry, the Iron Sench, Iron Guardians?
What the fuck are you talking about? Are you talking about the Ruin Sentries?
Ruin Sentinels, the Flexel Sentries.
The Pursuer.
The Dragon Rider, Ornstein. They're all enemies that are heavily armored. Yeah. Having a big sort of crushing type weapon really helps with those sorts of enemies.
I just shoot them with spells.
You also get to pick up Priest Chime out of a chest.
The description of the Priest Chime says, Dranglake was the home of many clerics, but King Vendrick held a lukewarm opinion of their powers and kept them only as attendants to ceremony. In this sense, Dranglake was not the place for a cleric with any ambition. Which sucks.
Kind of goes with what we've been picking up about Vendrick so far. We've had a few items that describe him as liking brutes and just warriors on the battlefield of the normal type, not the fancy-dancy spell type. So I don't think he likes the Master Caster Race Church.
No, well, look what happened to him. I found something interesting out recently, and this is probably not interesting to anybody but me, so feel free to cut it out if you want. But I was reading about chess and about the early versions of chess, and it turns out the pawns all used to have unique shapes and unique names, right, based on the roles that commoners used to do in society. So you would have, for instance, a foot soldier before the rook or the tower, because that's where foot soldiers work in the tower. And you had handmaiden before the queen.
Very cool.
You also had a clerk in front of the bishop.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as we know, clerical duties is clerk's duties, and clerics are religious people, and the original people that scribed and wrote things down and did clerical duties were working for clerics. So the word clerk comes from the word cleric, which comes from, it's a religious thing. And that's why we say clerks. That's why Jay and Silent Bob were in that movie.
About religion.
About religion.
And dogma. Smoking lots of weed.
Yeah, that one. Anyway.
That's actually really interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah, probably not interesting to the listeners. But, you
know. We'll leave it in anyway. Bugger.
Really? Right? Jesus.
We'll just force them to learn something.
I'm sorry, you guys.
So, there's also a Farad's Lockstone contraption in this room, and you do the old bam, straighten the kisser.
It's pow. Pow. Right in the kisser.
There you go. And Ghostface.
Ghostface killer. Hey, that's interesting. The ghost face appears. How do you get through it? You got to chop it. You got to be the ghost face killer. My jokes are just horrendously lame. There is a stone later on in Sinner's Rise, which isn't far. So if you don't have a stone, just remember that the contraption is there.
Yeah, if you're missing one, you can come back to this later. But if you can, I'd suggest going through it now, because you're going to get an item if you clear out this entire area that's very, very useful for later on as you go through Sinner's Rise. Now, you cross a little bridge into what is now the Belfry proper. Belfry. I think you're right. It is Belfry.
No, I say Belfry. Yeah, you're right. Do I? Yes, I do. I don't remember now. You just confused me with all your Belfries and your Basties.
And as you walk through the door into Belfry Luna, you encounter a dwarf. Mm-hmm. He's a little mad.
A long, long, long time ago, the princess, she made me. Yes, just like so. You wish to guard the bell, you do. For the prince and the princess forever. For true. When you're round the bell, you'll be brought near. When the bell is in trouble, the ring brings you here.
Yes, he's a little man and he's a little mad. I mean mad in the, you know, the sense of being insane. You know, he's always giggling. He's quite annoying, actually.
I know. I took him as just a general raving lunatic.
Yeah, I find that quite annoying.
So He's actually a Covenant leader, and you get to join the Bell Keeper's Covenant.
Yes.
If you finish his conversation.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting Covenant. It's similar to the Covenant that you found in the, what are the name of those woods where you found Alvira last time? What are they called? In Dark Souls 1?
Oh, it's Dark Root Garden.
I call it the Souls Farming area. But anyway, in that area, there's a Covenant where you join the Covenant and then you defend that area. So you get summoned into the world of those that have entered that area and you get to fight with them. Same deal here. Those that are coming to ring the bell are challenged by players who are members of the Covenant.
Yeah, precisely. And this is actually a Covenant that I spent most of my time in with my second character, just simply on the fact that I'm on PC now and fights load so quickly that once I joined this Covenant, like, I was getting fights every few minutes and I'm like, well, I never want to leave.
Yeah. And also, what do you get for winning?
You get a...
Titanite chunk.
Titanite chunk.
That's what you get. I asked you the question, knowing the answer, thinking you would know the answer. You didn't know the answer.
There's so many different types of Titanite. I didn't know if it was a shard or a block or a stubby. I don't know.
Har har. All right. Yeah, so if you like farming for Titanite, if you need Titanite chunks, you can load up real quick with these. Unfortunately, in this game, there's no feature like what we saw in Dark Souls 1 where Frampt would break Titanite down for you into simpler forms.
If you could, that would just be amazing. I know. Because you could stock up on Titanite chunks from this area so quickly and you would end up with just such a massive supply of all the different types of Titanite except, I think, the slabs. Now, this is a very interesting area in lore aspect. So you talk to the Covenant leader, who is a dwarf. Now, as you walk in, you actually notice that there's a massive pile of these dwarf corpses. And you're like, what the hell is going on here? Somebody's just going on like a...
killing spree.
Yeah, somebody doesn't like little men.
I think it's Tywin Lannister that doesn't like little men, but...
Har har.
I guess I earned that.
And it turns out they're not actually men. They are referred to as marionettes. And... these dwarves are protecting the bell from ringers.
And understanding what this guy's talking about in his dialogue actually reveals a little bit of history of the area. So he talks about allegiance to the prince and princess.
Yeah, the Prince of Alcan and the Princess of Ven, which were two lands of Dranglake, well, at least where Dranglake stands now. And they were founded by the same man.
Right, so Alcan was governed by a prince and Ven by a princess, and those are obviously the couple that this dwarf is talking about. Interestingly, and if you've been following our theories on some of the mobs you're going to fight throughout this game, you'll find this quite interesting. Those two experimented with bringing constructs to life with soul power.
And it explains that big pile of corpses as you walk in. They're not actually corpses, yeah. They're just constructs.
It's just spare parts.
Yeah, which is how we ended up with these dwarves as marionettes. They are... protecting these bells because they're a symbol of the love between the prince and the princess.
Oh.
So just like Game of Thrones, the little reference you made earlier, keeping it all in the family, the prince and the princess love each other, which is a bit incestuous.
It's also where I think those kinds of experiments led to things like the old Ironclad Knights and the jailers in the Lost Bastille and the Flexile Sentry. These are things that I think are constructs brought to life with soul power.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure if they're made by the same... prince and princess.
But sure, but we know I think by the sure, same magic.
Exactly. If you join the Covenant, you get a ring, and if you wear the ring once you've joined the Covenant, basically, well, I don't know, people are saying that you have to be in the areas around the belfries. It seems to me that I can be almost anywhere, and I'll get summoned into a fight all the time. So what happens is you spawn into the world of a host in the belfry, and your goal is to stop them making it through the gate. Now, I found it a bit odd because these dwarves that you talk to, the Covenant leaders, always tell you that you need to stop them ringing the bell.
Yeah, but what happens if they ring the bell?
Well, they open the gate and they can get away. But once they've rung the bell once, the gate's already open. So to me, it would have seemed so much cooler if every time you die, you have to go back up and ring the bell. And so you enter the area, people summon in. And their entire goal is to try and stop you ringing that bell.
Yeah.
Like, just keep them away from the lever. It would just be like a gauntlet run. Just guard that lever. As opposed to, they've rung it, keep them away from the gate, which most people aren't going to want to go through, because if you know what's behind that gate,
yeah,
it's like a rock and a hard place. I would probably rather deal with an invader than
what's behind the gate. I mean, obviously, bear in mind that often you get two invaders at a time, and you kill them and get more.
Sure, but a lot of people will take death by an invader over going into a boss battle that they're not prepared for yet.
Yes, look, I agree. It's actually a kind of boring area gameplay-wise other than the invasions, I think. I mean, if you imagine playing this area offline, a bunch of those dwarves, and that's it.
Hmm. Well, on that note, you finish talking to the Covenant leader and you go up the first flight of stairs and you end up on the first level and here's the first dwarf that actually tries to attack you.
Yeah, interestingly, this guy's a grey spectre.
Black Phantom, Black Grey Phantom. Spectre. I'm like,
what's
not sure.
going on? Because the Covenant leader you spoke to is an actual marionette. This guy seems to have been summoned in from somewhere else. And I suppose it fits with the theme of the Covenant summons you in. But if these guys are making marionettes to look after them, and they've got a bunch of spare parts laying around, and some of them are still functional at the Covenant leader, why is it people from other timelines coming in?
Yeah, it didn't quite make sense to me. I wasn't sure about that either. Let us know if you guys have any theories as to why these dwarves are Black Phantoms.
That's one of two continuity errors that I think we're going to point out this episode.
Possibly, unless somebody can come up with a clever explanation.
Yes. So past that phantom dwarf, on the right, hanging over some railing, is a corpse with a skeptic spice.
Yeah, it's interesting. You'll pick up another skeptic spice in the area, and there's Belfry Soul that you'll come across later on in the game, and you pick up a lot of simpleton spice in that area, which seems significant somehow, and I haven't quite figured out how. It's possible that we're in the realm of Alkin with Belfry Luna.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they were not very miracle-inspired, whereas Belfry Soul, which is Ven, weren't very magic-inspired.
Maybe.
So, from here you go up to the second level, and we mentioned the gate,
mm-hmm.
and then you go up a ladder to the level with the lever for the bell.
Yes, so the lever is surrounded by... did we decide it was four or five dwarves?
I don't think it really matters.
So the lever is surrounded by several dwarves, and if your gameplay style when fighting them is to retreat from them, often you'll aggro the others. That's what I did the first time, and then you have to deal with them all at once, while often being invaded by other players.
Yeah, and interestingly, if you are playing this area offline, and only if you're playing it offline, you get a red phantom that invades at this point, which is just another dwarf, and he's not particularly hard, or he has a little bit more health, but it's weird. When you kill him, you get another... rusted coin, but I'm not sure why they include that in the game. Offline.
I think it's fairly obvious. It's because if you're in that area and you want to do it easily, you just unplug your console, right? So you can't get invaded. So they added a little disincentive to do that. I mean, it's not a very strong disincentive, but it is a disincentive.
So up on this level is where you get to pick up another one of those skeptic spices, as we were talking about earlier. And there's the lever for the bell. Now, pulling this lever, if you're quick enough, you can go straight back down the ladder and actually see the gate rise for the fight that we're about to enter in a moment.
Yeah, because one thing about that, I think, is that you wouldn't necessarily know that you've opened that grill.
Yeah, no, I didn't understand the significance of pulling the lever at all. I pulled it a few times because I'm like, what the hell just happened? There was a big noise. There was the sound of movement. I pulled it again to see if I could get more movement so I could see. Nah, no idea. You didn't make that very clear. Thanks, Rom.
Yeah. On that level, there's also a wooden chest with a twilight herb. You know, Americans say twilight herb. That's weird, herb. Why don't you say the H? There's an H there.
Silent?
Silent H. It's not a silent H. We say a herb. They'll say an herb. Doesn't make any sense.
You're just saying this because we have an American in the room, aren't you, Church?
My girlfriend's a Yank, and it's her you can hear at the end of the podcast doing the outro. She flipped me the bird just now. Anyway, twilight herb sounds like a drug to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, man, have you got any twilight herb?
So the twilight herb is used to restore some casts. So yeah. Useful for mages.
So back down the ladder and onto the first level, and there are holes in the ground that you can fall through.
Yeah, and if you fall through one of them, you'll end up in a slightly raised area from the ground level. It's another one of those. You can see the ledge. It's only knee high, but you can't get into it because somehow...
because you can't climb 1 foot in this game.
Yeah, it's one of those type deals. But in any case, if you get into this area, there is a chest and you can pick up a blue tearstone ring. Now, the blue tearstone ring is a bit interesting. It raises your physical defense by 35% only while your health is below 30%.
Yeah, there's a lot of games that do stuff like this. And I've got to say, it's like one of my little hang-ups. I've never used one of these items. I don't like them. It seems like...
Why would you want to rely on something that you have to be bad to have it work?
I mean, well, everyone dies. It's not about being good or bad. But I just doesn't seem that appealing to me. Some interesting stuff about the blue tearstone ring and Kaitha, the goddess of tears, who, it says in the item description, mourns those who have lost loved ones by shedding pure tears of blue. It is said that the stone set in this ring is one such tear. So in that way, it's very similar to the red tearstone ring.
Yeah, very cool little anecdote. Kaitha is another one of those gods that you can read about on the name engraved ring. So I just thought it was worth bringing up at this point. She might be a primordial serpent.
Yeah, who knows?
So, Belfry gargoyles.
Yeah, doesn't that sound familiar?
So through the fog gate, or the grill that you've just raised by ringing the bell, and into a very familiar environment for those that made it through the first couple of bosses in Dark Souls 1.
It does. It looks, I mean, it's not the same layout, but it's very reminiscent. And the gargoyles, the enemies are very, very similar as well. Smaller, I think.
A little bit, but the big difference you notice quite quickly is, oh, this seems familiar. I'm getting attacked by two gargoyles. What the hell? Another one's appeared.
Mm.
So in no time at all, you can very quickly get...
five of them, basically.
Yeah, surrounded.
Mm.
But the trick with these, they'll have one large health bar down the bottom. And when you walk through the door, two of them will fairly quickly attack you. But the third won't come into the fight until the overall health bar, which is the large one down the bottom, gets to 90%.
Mm-hmm.
Once it's at 90%, the third will enter the fight. And again, the fourth won't enter until that's down to 70, and the fifth until it's down to 50.
Right. So the lesson there is, if you spread the damage out over several of them and don't get rid of them one at a time, then you're bringing that health bar down to 90, then 70, and maybe even 50 without lowering the number of enemies. So you're stacking them against you. So the best thing to do, obviously, is to knock them down one at a time. So as you're lowering the overall health bar, you're also reducing the number of enemies you have to fight.
Yeah. So if you're going to follow any tip, because, I mean, this boss is hard. There's five of them. They can very quickly overwhelm you. The pro tip here is, if you walk in and start attacking one of them, try to focus on one at a time and knock them out. If you can get rid of the first before the third gets a chance to fully join in, you're only ever dealing with two at a time, which is a lot easier than five.
Yeah, and Strayed of Olafis can actually turn their soul into the gargoyle bident, which is like a trident, but it's only got 2 points. But you can't chop off bits of these bosses to make a weapon.
Yeah, which is something missing from this game, which kind of sucked. I like that little secret from the last game. Almost all the bosses that had a tail and some other important characters, you could chop their tail off and get a secret weapon. Now, there was a bit of a foreshadowing there. We haven't actually covered Strayed of Olafis, but we have mentioned a number of times that the soul items that you get from bosses can be converted into weapons, and we're actually going to meet the first character that allows you to do that very soon.
Very soon, 99. Wait, shit, 99's from Get Smart. I should have said very soon, Moneypenny. I should have, and then ultimately I did, so that saved the day. Crisis over.
Averted.
No, over. Because it wasn't averted. There was a crisis for a little while. Fine. And now it's over.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Just, you know, you'd be more appreciative, I think.
So you kill the gargoyles, praise the sun, all that rubbish, go through the door at the other end, and down a spiral staircase, and you'll come across a chest with the Southern Ritual Band.
And the Southern Ritual Band's actually, you know, pretty decent, I think, because if you're like me and you like casting spells and you're constantly stacking up points in attunement trying to get more spell slots, and it's freaking unrewarding because attunement doesn't do much, and it's one of the
makes you cast spells moon. Faster.
Well, whatever. I don't need to cast faster. I need to cast more. Well, that's freaking frustrating because it's, you know, you're wasting all your bloody levels on nothing. But this gives you another attunement slot, and that's awesome.
Or if you're like me, who doesn't spend much time on casting, you can get more attunement slots without having to invest too many souls in the magical arts.
But then your spells are really slow, so what's the point?
Oh, threw that one back in my face, didn't you?
Well, the item description does say that this was restored in Aldia, one of the secret treasures restored, not created, but restored in Aldia. Now, we'll talk about Aldia a little bit later on, but I thought Aldia was a person.
Yeah, it is, and I found that a bit weird as well.
Is this guy just, what, eats rocks and shits rings? What's that mean? Restored in Aldia. Who knows?
So out the door and down another rampart, and you'll come across another bonfire, the Upper Ramparts Bonfire.
Yeah. And nearby, you will find a ladder down to what Jammer calls the dog yard. Well, there's a lot of dogs there, 6 or 7.
Yeah, they'll mob you quick. And basically, as soon as you get to the bottom of the ladder, they'll come circling around. And the dogs alone are quite challenging. There's a number of them. You can get overwhelmed, again, just like the gargoyles. It seems to like its big numbers in this area. But not only that, you'll get a red phantom that summons in as soon as your feet touch the ground.
Yeah, Vorgel the Sinner.
Mm. And Vorgel alone, not yeah, such a difficult I think he phantom.
Commits the sin of being weak as piss.
Yeah.
I mean, he's useless.
Light armor, spear that doesn't do much damage, small shield, not a terribly difficult phantom. But him, while dealing with 5-6 dogs, comes a very different story.
Yeah, I agree. So, you know, what you need to do is get rid of the dogs as quickly as possible. You can't yearn them. You can't use an alluring skull, which is normally yeah, what you do when there's a bunch of enemies. Yeah, they're hungry for meat. They don't want... Well, maybe that's an interesting point. Maybe the dogs are not interested in souls. Maybe they're interested in the meat on your bones.
Mm-hmm. No, that's dead right, because the alluring skull is described as a mass of souls. And so mm-hmm. it only makes sense that only undead would be interested in chasing the souls.
Yep.
Now, once you've dispatched all the enemies in this area, you get to pick up an enchanted falchion.
Falchion. I'd say Falchion, but I haven't looked it up.
I'm going to have another of these moments.
Yeah, well, I think it's Falchion, but that's because I, you know, read books and stuff.
So, I do too.
My first book of mispronouncing words.
Hungry, hungry caterpillar.
Once upon a time, Zeus, god of Thor, went to the Lost Bastille.
To hang out in the Belfry.
Anyway, sorry, I cut across you there because I thought about a mean joke. This happens a lot to me when I'm around you, I find.
And I never have anything witty to come back with.
Well, not immediately, anyway.
Yeah, it's the worst, isn't it?
Like,
3 days later in the shower, oh my god, I should have said, damn it, it's too late.
I get that a lot as well. I mean, you know, everyone does that probably, but like all the freaking time, someone says something rude to you, and then a week later you're like, oh my god, the next time that guy says that exact same thing to me, or I've got him stitched up. Yeah, like that's ever going to happen.
Happens.
But if you do have friends as lame as me who can't think of decent original jokes and just recycle the same old jokes, it's probably pretty handy, yeah?
Yeah, well, if I was quicker-witted than I am, probably.
But that's what I'm saying is you don't need to be quick-witted if you thought about a response in advance. You just keep it in your mind and bring it out later. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
So it's a tip for later, right? You work on that. I'm a prick. Anyway. Okay, let's just do a podcast.
So the enchanted Falchion.
Falchion. Falchion. Who cares? Do you reckon any of our listeners actually know how to pronounce that word? Or Bastille? Or Belfry? Or who Zeus is? Yeah.
No, we've probably, like, just sent out hundreds of minions with completely false things, and they're going to pick sides and fight between themselves now.
Yeah.
So this enchanted falchion, who cares? It's not interesting at all. Let's move on to the next item in the area.
No, there's an interesting thing about falchion, about enchanted, right? Because enchanted is different to magic.
Mm-hmm.
So a magic item has normal damage plus magic damage, and the magic damage scales with intelligence, right?
Correct.
Enchanted weapons have normal damage, but the normal damage scales with intelligence. So there's no additional damage done by magic.
Right.
It's just that the physical damage is affected by how intelligent you are.
Correct, which...
It's a bit like an insult in that way. Oh, fuck, how do you pronounce that? Look at this. Look at the pronunciation there. I don't speak Klingon. It's bullshit.
So, for the listeners at home, we've looked it up on Wikipedia.
And there's, you know, the IPA, the International PA, whatever that stands for.
Pronunciation.
Association. I don't know what IPA stands for. But anyway, the point is, it's all weird symbols and letters. There's like a German Schlaffer S in there, and there's a backward C. There's a semicolon and an upside down E. What do these things mean?
Are we ever going to get to the end of this podcast?
Look, I'm just going to Google how to pronounce falchion. Just give me a second. Falchion. Oh, what? Based on the derivation of the word, my choice would be falchion or falchion. The following two dictionary references concur. Shit. All right, so we just Googled it. It turns out that Taboo is probably right. It's either falchion or falchion.
Oh, yeah.
So, I got to say, first time for everything, buddy. Got to hand it to you. Good job.
Thanks, bro.
All right.
Can we just get through this episode? All right,
let's just do the podcast. Let's cast a pod. All right. On your mark, go.
So after picking up the falchion,
mm-hmm.
under the stairs is a corpse with the Bastille key. And the Bastille key is going to be incredibly helpful later on in the game. Yeah,
the Bastille key is a good one. It's funny, you don't mostly use the Bastille key in the Bastille, though, do you?
While you use it mostly in Sinner's Rise, that is still the Bastille.
I guess, yeah, all right, fine. All right, so let's fast travel back to the Servants' Quarters bonfire.
Yeah, so once you picked up the key, back up the ladder, take the bonfire to the Servants' Quarters bonfire once again, which is where we started the area. So straightforward from the Servants' bonfire, you head out a door, and this door leads out to some ramparts. Now, we're not going to focus on all the minor crappy little items that you pick up that we've covered many times before, but interestingly, if you break this door or close it, there is a little item behind it. I don't think it's anything important, maybe a soul or something like that.
Yeah, but you wouldn't know. I didn't notice it the first time around.
And if you turn right, you can enter into a tower. This tower has two ways out of it. There's some stairs leading up, which we'll come back to in a moment, or you can go left, back out onto some more ramparts. Now, as you head out these ramparts, on the right, there's a break in the balustrade, and you can get onto the roof.
Would you say balustrade or would you say crenellations? I'd say crenellations, personally. But
I don't know what that means, so I wouldn't say that ever.
Okay, well, in the crenellations are crumbled, and you can go through the crumbled crenellations and onto a roof. Just interestingly, because it's easy to miss. To the right, you turn right, there's an item there. Not particularly important, but you know, you'll miss it otherwise. You'll remember from the last episode, we talked about the well that comes up, and there's three of the undead citizens inside.
Yeah, in a little courtyard with some dogs. Yes.
This is where, if you left the wanderer's set on the corpse in the cage, you can drop down into the cage and get it from here.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky jump, but it's not impossible. I've done it, but completely useless to you now, because I did jump into the cage when there was nothing in there, and it did nothing. I was kind of hoping it would take me down, but...
That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
So, from this roof... You can see some wooden structure just above the well, which you would think you'd want to drop onto to try and jump across to another roof.
Yeah, it does look like that's what you're supposed to do.
Which I did the first few times, and it is doable, but I found that it's much easier to go straight down the apex of the first roof, and before you get to the bottom of that roof, jump across to the other roof, and it doesn't look like you can make it, but you'll make it much easier than dropping onto the wooden structure.
Yeah.
Now, from this roof, up a ladder... and through a hole in a wall. And as you do that, you'll plop back out into an area. On the left, a lever, which opens a gate. And if you turn right, a room full of barrels and undead citizen. Now, I think it's worth just briefly touching on the undead citizen, because we did talk about them last week, but we didn't actually spend any time on them. So, very quickly, if you haven't figured it out yet, these are the citizens that were rounded up by Vendrick as the curse was spreading. So, things have... become run down for the Bastille. They're sort of out and about and wandering a bit. True to form, they don't have any weapons or anything like that.
Yeah, because they're prisoners.
Think about it. Yeah, prisoners wouldn't have weapons. So it's only, obviously, it seems through time and hollowing that they've developed this sort of explodey ability that they use to attack you.
Yeah, well, when you've got nothing else, you know.
Cut a hole in your stomach and set yourself on fire.
Yep.
So from here, as you exit this room, you'll end up at the top of the stairs to the spiral staircase in the tower that we mentioned earlier.
So this is a big loop we've done, basically.
Yeah. So back up to the gate that we mentioned earlier, pull the lever on the wall and go through it. Now, you're going to enter into a room around the corner, which is full of these gourd-shaped, clay.
They're like a big vase almost. But there's bars in the front. I think it's for transporting people. But interestingly, it's kind of like, if you have a look at them closely, there's no opening in them. It's not like you can open a door and whack someone in there. It's almost like they were made around the people that they imprisoned. And indeed, when you roll through a bunch of them, you will find a fellow, an undead citizen, standing there just hanging out. They do have like a weird head shape. So maybe you can wrap a rope around it and lift it up onto the ship or something. But it's a strange way to... It's a lot of effort to go to transport people.
That's not a terrible theory. Could have been, used for transporting.
Yeah, but it's just weird. It's a lot of effort to go to. It just seems really strange.
Okay. So in any case, in this room, there's a little alcove. And the alcove appears to have nothing in it. But at the end of it is an illusory wall. As you open this illusory wall, you end up in this sort of angular corridor.
Mm.
And halfway up that on the left, again, there doesn't appear to be anything in this corridor, is another illusory wall, which leads outside on the upper ramparts. And this is great because it gets you to a section where you can pick up a couple of secret items that you might have seen and wondered to yourself, well, how the hell am I ever going to get that? This is where you get to pick them up. So if you turn left...
This is where you find the corpse, which has the bracing knuckle ring.
That's correct.
Which slows equipment degradation. And the question there, of course, is who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't find degradation makes a damn difference at all in my life.
I got 10 fingers, buddy. This game is giving me access to 4 of them. And even if I had access to all 10, I still probably wouldn't wear this ring.
Yeah, it's pointless.
So once you picked up the bracing knuckle ring, turn around and there's a little jump you can make across to another pillar, I guess I'll call it. And there's a corpse there. You can pick up some other crappy items, nothing terribly important. I think another flame butterfly. But if you're being really observant, you may notice that you can drop onto a little ledge. And this ledge, you follow it for quite some distance. It's very thin and it's very easy to fall off, but you navigate around a couple of sharp turns and you'll get to the end and you'll get to pick up the gold wing shield. Now, we mentioned as a tip at the top of the podcast that you can bat projectiles out of the air with the parry. And it seems from what I've seen, if somebody is shooting a spell at you, like a soul arrow, you can bat it out of the air and that just dissipates it. It makes it so it doesn't do any damage to you. It just disappears. Now, the item description for this shield says that it can deflect spells with a parry. I've tried to look for videos. I haven't been able to find anything, but it says to me that you might be able to actually send the spell back at the person that cast it with a well-timed parry.
Like a lightsaber.
Yeah, pretty cool rubbish.
You made an interesting note in the notes, that all these corpses carrying all these items must have died from fear of heights. Because it's true, there's a lot of corpses just hanging out on high ledges.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing there.
That was just a little inside joke for me. You weren't supposed to announce that to everyone, but I guess they're getting a look behind the scenes.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. But it's true, why would that guy be hanging out there on the edge of a ledge? It's not like they stuffed him there to send a warning to anyone, because he's carrying a really valuable shield. So
prisoner trying to escape...
With a shield?
Wardens found him and peppered him with arrows.
Maybe. Who knows?
Best I could come up with at late notice.
Yep.
Now, unfortunately, from here, if you turn around to head back, you had to drop down half a foot to get onto this ledge. And again, can't get back up it, so you're going to have to drop off at some point. I suggest dropping off where you picked up the shield, because that's going to put you directly above Macduff's bonfire.
Yeah, so basically you'll see a barrel. That's the barrel you knock down to make the hole to go in to see Macduff.
So take Macduff's bonfire back to the servants' quarters, get back to where we are, and we'll carry on. So back into the room with the gourds and head up some stairs, and you will end up in an area with another one of those statues that we came across earlier in Majula.
Yes, the statue of a person that has been petrified. So we know that you need what's called a fragrant branch of yore. The closest one to here is in Sinner's Rise. The item description says, a fragrant tree branch with a faint sweet smell. Restore the life of things turned to stone. Extended inhalation of the branch's scent can lead to coughing and nausea. It's interesting. It's nice to have the safety warnings on some of these items. You know, keep out of reach of children, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so... For those that have been wondering about these statues, not everyone probably does know that you need a fragrant branch of yore at this point, because you may not have picked one up. And if you don't have one in your inventory, then or your inventory,
yes,
then yeah, we mentioned that there will be an opportunity to pick one up a little later in Sinner's Rise. But if you can use it now, because you'll be able to access the bonfire behind Strayed. And you'll get access to Strayed, who's an incredibly important NPC.
Absolutely. Firstly, he's a badass. Like, he's really cool.
I love the way his armor looks. It's just beautiful.
Yes.
He's got this little mask. It looks like he's come from a masquerade ball. He's got this flowing black coat.
He's got this awesome, like, his chest piece is really cool too. Like, this,
yeah.
He's got this dark armor and the dark metal on his chest piece. It looks cool. He's just a cool looking dude. He's got a cool staff.
He's like, you know how in the mid-2000s, how this goth movement was a thing?
Yeah,
maybe even a bit earlier than that, maybe late 90s. So goth was a thing, and it's a bit of a laughing stock now. He reminds me of if goth were actually cool.
Yeah. So Strayed's cool. He's a really powerful sorcerer, and he got an audience with the king to, you know, do his magic show.
Yeah, not just a sorcerer, though. He was quite good with the pyros, and he was regarded as one of the best of his time. And yeah, you're right. He eventually got an audience with the king.
Yeah, but I guess people grew fearful of his tricks and decided to imprison him.
So that's how he has ended up at the Bastille. And this is where you've mentioned that you feel like there might be a bit of a continuity error. And I'm inclined to agree with you.
I am Strayed, a wandering sorcerer of sorts.
So,
How long was I sat petrified? Long enough for the old kingdom to have crumbled, I see. Drang Lake. I've never heard the name. Is that what they call this place now?
So, one of the things that he says to you, Strayed, is, what's Drang Lake? Is that what they call this place now? Something along those lines. Drang Lake, never heard of it. And then he says, to paraphrase, this is where they locked away all the people that were cursed after they decided they were scared of them. And they started locking other people up, whether they were cursed or not, they wanted to get rid of.
Yeah, so he's aware of what Vendrick was doing, which means he must have been aware of Vendrick.
Which means he ought to be aware of Drang Lake, because that's Vendrick's claim to fame.
So...
So why has he not heard of... I mean, maybe he's just gone nuts.
Yeah, but if you've been a statue for millennia, you don't go nuts and create the exact answer to what's going on around you.
When's the last time you were a statue for millennia?
Okay, well, maybe. So, yeah, it just seemed a little odd that he was aware of that.
But yeah.
Nonetheless, that's how he's ended up at the Bastille. The citizens feared his power, and they decided to lock him up.
Bastille.
Now, he plays a very important role. He allows you to convert all those lost souls that you've been collecting along the way. And you can convert them into some pretty powerful weapons. Some of them just unique, some of them cool, some of them powerful.
Spells.
Or spells, yeah.
Which is new. You couldn't do that in the last game.
Not new. You could do it in Demon Souls.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, whatever.
But what you'll notice is all weapons rely on Petrified Dragon Bone to level them up. And Petrified Dragon Bone is incredibly rare. It seems like you'll probably only pick up enough throughout a single playthrough to maybe level up one weapon. So my sorts of thoughts were maybe convert some of these souls into boss weapons, but you're probably going to be choosing a boss weapon for New Game Plus, because by the time you get to the end of the game, it's only then going to be fully leveled up.
Yeah.
Now, he also sells the Lingering Dragon Crest Ring.
Yes, which extends the duration of magic effects.
And interestingly, the Lingering Dragon Crest Ring... The Lingering Dragon Crest Ring was an item from Dark Souls 1 as well. And the description from Dark Souls 1 is a special ring granted to only those most accomplished sorcerers at Vinheim Dragon School. But in Dark Souls 2, the description is a ring used long, long ago in the land that existed where Drang Lake is now. So does that not suggest that where Drang Lake is now was actually Vinheim?
I mean, it does. It says used, though, not created. But I think that, you know, that's a semantic point. The point is that actually it seems to be suggesting that Vinheim is where Drang Lake is now. Maybe that's some interesting chronology. Maybe the chronology goes Vinheim, then Lordran, then Drang Lake on that spot.
Possible. It could, yeah, as you said, just be a semantic thing and not actually mean that. It's still talking about Lordran. But, yeah, it was just interesting to go back and read the item description for the previous weapon, which I try to do if you pick up an item in this game that is in Dark Souls 1.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely a worthwhile endeavor.
The last thing that you'll get from Strayed if you exhaust his conversation and bring up his menu is his mock gesture.
Yeah. So Strayed was blocking a door, and now that he's not a big old rock anymore, there's a bonfire behind that door.
Yeah, the Strayed's Cell Bonfire. Now, once you've started the bonfire, you can turn left, and there's another cell right next to where Strayed was. And this is where the Bastille key will come in handy.
The Bastille key, yes.
Because you get to open this gate, and in this room is actually a petrified dragon bone. Nice that you get one now. It'll definitely come in handy if you bought a boss soul item from Strayed a moment ago. Now, from here, you can open another door in the cell, walk out the door, and you can end up on a bridge outside, which allows you to skip a few of those undead citizens. But the alternative is to go down the stairs from this bonfire and pull a lever on the wall and open up a gate that leads out to the bridge.
Mm.
Now, run the gauntlet down the bridge while getting peppered by crossbows from three archers up on the...
Yep.
And what was that fancy word you used earlier?
They're firing between the crenellations. The crenellations are those block-type things. You see the classical castle shape, you know, it's for the arches to shoot between. That
the
thing.
More you know.
Yeah, the more you know. And then at the end of that is the fog gate to Sinner's Rise.
Mm. So through that, over some broken floor and up a ladder, and you will get to a bonfire. But just before that, if you turn right at the top of the ladder, you get to pick up a large
soul of a lost undead. We haven't done that in so long.
Yeah, we probably good reason for that.
Well, you make up some songs then, and we'll sing those.
This is got to be my least favorite bonfire in the goddamn game. How angry I am at this. My God.
I didn't, you know what? I don't mind it all that much. Like, I know what you're saying, because this bonfire, you know, you wake up from your bonfire nap, and I don't know why I said wake up, so I had to go with it. And there's three guys shooting with crossbows. And actually, they're...
But you don't even have to wake up. That's the part that shits me. We've been taught for 3 games now that every time you sit at a bonfire, it's a safe place. It's a happy place. You can take a nap.
There were no bonfires in Demon's Souls.
Archstone, then fine. Screw you, bugger.
Anyway, the point is that this is the only instance of an unsafe bonfire. You cannot... Sitting at this bonfire is not safe because those guys will notice you and shoot you with their crossbows.
Yep, even while you're in the menu.
Yep.
So sometimes I'll be like, oh, okay, well, I've made it to this bonfire. Got to go, you know, take a piss. I'll sit at the bonfire, leave my character, and I'll come back and suddenly I'll have lost all my souls and I'll just be a red stain on the ground. Very frustrating.
So immediately kill those idiots and then you can go down the ladder that you'll find by the bonfire and...
Around the outside of the tower.
Yes. There's an archer guarding a door and be sure to poke your head around the corner nearby. You'll get an effigy. That's nice to have.
Yeah, and through the door that he's guarding and into a room with an elevator, take the elevator all the way down.
So you slaughter the swordsman and go down the elevator. You'll notice as you go down there's a bit of a wooden area, and it's one of those deals where you can step off and end up on the wooden area to pick up some lacerating knives, which are a new item you wouldn't have encountered yet. Not much damage, but it's a bleed thing, you know, lacerating.
All right, so drop off this little level where you picked up the lacerating knives. You're not going to take any fall damage. It's quite low. And you'll notice a summon sign for Lucatil if you're human.
Yeah, Lucatil of Mira. I like Lucatil.
Yeah, we've said that a number of times.
You actually mentioned an interesting tip, and this is something that it seems so horrendously obvious. I never realized that before. If you're in an area where you think you might die and you're at an elevator, you might as well send the elevator back up near the bonfire so you have to wait for it next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all you have to do is walk over the little thing as you leave. It's fine. Yep.
The elevator's going to go away. You'll forget about it. Next time you spawn at the bonfire, it's going to be up top waiting for you.
Yeah, brilliant.
Now, I actually wondered why Lucatil wasn't able to be summoned for the Iron Sentries.
Yes. Do you have an answer to that why question?
Because she can be summoned here.
Well, you can summon her several times. So being able to be summoned here wouldn't preclude her from being summoned at the Ruined Sentinels.
Right, but...
So it doesn't matter.
It seems to follow, though. If you get to talk to the NPC in the area, then you can summon her once in the area. And I just assume that that would normally be the next boss you came across. In this case, it was the Iron Sentinels, and you couldn't summon her there. But now you can summon her. Yes. I don't suggest doing it yet because you're going to traipse through a bit of a hairy territory and there's a good chance you might die or she might die on the process to the boss fight.
Yes. In this area, down a short flight of stairs, there's a large flooded area with a number of enhanced undead.
Yeah, that's what they're called. Bit of a weird name.
Yeah, they... You know, you're in a flooded room and there's no iron ring in this game that allows you to move quicker in the water as yet. So you are stuck moving slowly and these guys are dangerous.
Hit like Mack trucks.
Yeah. They're quite slow themselves, but they'll whack you real hard. And there's some speculation about their nature. They drop a malformed skull. The item description says the skull of some unidentified creature, possibly the skull of a dragon.
Yeah, so the theory goes that these guys are actually half-human, half-dragon experiments of Aldia. Now, Aldia is King Vendrick's older brother, and he helped found Dranglake with Vendrick, but he seemed to, over time, lose interest in, I guess, the honor that came with that sort of a position, and sort of more reclused himself to... I don't think that's a word, is it?
I wasn't going to have a go at you for once. You could have just kept on trucking.
Well, I didn't. He secluded himself to his own little experiments. He reminds me of a Seath. His experiments seem to be on anything he could get his hands on, basically.
He was making
just weird things out of it. And it'll come up a bit later in the game, but he seems to have an interest in dragons and recreating dragons. And it follows that these enhanced undead were actually humanoid undead. And have now been turned half-dragon by Aldia as a failed experiment, and now they're these weird, mutant, pustulous, gross...
I mean, they're quite reminiscent of the Titanite demons from the last game in the sense they've got to kind of drag themselves along, which I think is interesting. But I think you're right, actually. I think that there's a lot of evidence that they are half-dragon experiments of Aldia. Also, interestingly enough, Priscilla from the first game, the half-breed Priscilla, who looked a lot better than these guys do, was half-human and half-dragon.
Yeah, I experimented with that, but I couldn't really make a connection there myself.
No, I'm not sure there is one. It's just an interesting point to note.
Repeating themes throughout the Souls games, yeah.
Those dudes are quite difficult, but there is an easy way to kill them. The elevator that you've sent up, according to Taboo's tip, has left a hole in the ground with some water in it. If you lure them into that room, they'll want to chase you around. You might need to incite them to strike at you, and then in correcting their position, they will fall into that hole and die. You can't pick up any items they might drop, unfortunately, but it's just a really easy way to get rid of a dangerous enemy.
Yeah. So in the room on the left, there's actually a sublime bone dust, which...
Yeah.
Don't find many of them around, yes. So incredibly useful to pick up here.
Yes, and they obviously they reinforce your Estus flask.
Mm. And the room on the right, I think this one may actually interest a lot of players because what you find with flooded areas is you can't leave orange soapstone. So this is something I think many of you would have missed.
I mean, you can leave it, but you just don't know that it's there unless you walk over it and press A.
Does it actually give you a prompt?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, you might be right.
I generally am.
Illusory wall.
Yes, right there. So you walk into the flooded area, down the steps, turn right, 90 degrees. The wall that you are facing is illusionary. So you walk up to the middle of it, press A, there you go.
You get to exit the entire Bastille into an area which is on sea level,
mm-hmm.
and you can see the vast expanse. Don't walk too far out into it because you will fall off the edge.
Mm. And you can't see where the edge is because it's underwater.
Yep, so just hug the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go left, you get to pick up a...
Northern Ritual Band, which is another of the secret treasures restored in Aldia.
Yeah.
Weird, hey?
Yeah. So I'm sure it must mean by Aldia. Might be another one of those Japanese translation errors.
Yeah, maybe. And it's interesting, you know, the Southern Ritual Band and the Northern Ritual Band, both restored in Aldia.
Yeah, so it makes sense that Aldia, being the little tinkerer and experimenter that he is, was obviously restoring these items from, I don't know, the previous years, I suppose, and maybe getting use out of them again, because after they've been sitting there for a while, they might lose their value or their purpose.
This one increases your number of casts, but costs a bit of health. I'd never really used it.
Yeah. So if you've got a really cool spell, but you've only got one or two casts, might be of interest to you.
You also get a bleed stone in the area, which allows you to add bleed damage to weapons or add bleed resist to shields.
Interesting point. The different types of stones you can pick up. A lot of people are going to only think to enchant weapons with them. If you enchant a shield, it raises the resistance of that type of attack to the shield.
Hmm.
So really handy. If you're coming across a magic boss, you could use a magic stone to fully get 100% magic resist and make it a lot easier when you encounter those sorts of enemies.
Yeah, absolutely. So back through the illusionary wall, further up, there are stairs on the left and the right. On the right, you won't find anything but a citizen crouched in the water. But on the left...
Sneaky bastard.
Yeah, I know, that is not fair.
Crouched just low enough that you can't see him.
Yep. Bastard.
But if you go up the left stairs... Which is what you were going to say.
Yeah, that if you have that Bastille key, you can get a fire seed. It's the first time you encounter a fire seed. The item description says, a tiny waning flame used to strengthen a pyromancy flame. Fire is a common object of worship. It can never be grasped, and its mystery stokes human imagination.
Yeah, so again, speaking to the relevance of fire and flame to the Dark Souls universe, but it puts it out there for pyromancy.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, these items combined with souls allows you to level up the pyromancy flame, which is what will give you stronger attacks with your pyromancies. As opposed to most other types of magic in the game, you either need to level up your intelligence or your faith. This one doesn't rely on that massive soul level investment to meet requirements for spells and cast spells. It just relies on basically being able to afford
the upgrades, yeah. Mm. And it's like so too with the pyromancy glove from the first game.
Yep, absolutely. Which was great because it allowed me to stay at a soul level 30, which is a very low level, and get the best pyromancy in the game and just do heaps and heaps of PvE to get souls to level up my flame to like a plus 15 with the best pyros and then do a heap PvP on noobs that are only around level 30.
Yep, so you're one of those.
I am.
Now I know I've been mean to you this whole time.
What? There's nothing wrong with a bit of...
hacking?
Oh, come on now. That's called planning your build. No, hours went into making that build.
It's neither hacking nor planning. It's just an exploit.
I disagree.
Yeah, no, I'm only kidding. I'm just a mean guy. You see, you laugh like a woman.
You are a mean guy.
I told you.
So, at the end of these little stretches, there's two gates on the left and right side, and you can open them with the Bastille key.
Yep.
However, if you don't have the key, you can actually do this entire area without either.
Yes. Interestingly, I did this area before I did the Belfry Luna Gargoyle area, and I was fine. I never had the Bastille key.
Right. That's going to be more relevant a little later on.
Yes. I wish I had the Bastille key.
Mm. So, you can drop down from here and pull a lever on the wall to open a gate if you don't have the key. Now, dropping down, though, will trigger a number of the undead citizens to come out of their little jail cells below. And they can quickly overwhelm you when you can't move quickly in the water. So, my suggestion is to pull the lever for that gate and get up onto those stairs as quickly as possible out of the water and then funnel them through the little gap in the wall with the stairs and take them on one-on-one.
There's also a Ferris Lockstone and that fragrant branch of yore we mentioned earlier in the last cell on the right.
Mm.
Now we are nearing the boss fight.
Yeah, the run-up to the boss. Interesting area.
It is quite cool. There's an interesting little dynamic going on here. There's a couple of times, I think, one of them was the Hades Tower of Flame, where doing some work in the level before you fight the boss changes the boss fight. And this is one of those areas.
Mm, absolutely, yeah.
The interesting thing about the Bastille key is you can use it here. On the right and left, there are staircases. But if you go up the left and right staircases and use the Bastille key to open the doors, then you can use a flame butterfly to light your torch and light the oil that you see. And there's a cool little animation as the flame travels away from you to some unknown place.
Yeah, I really like that.
It's quite cool.
Really cool. But you mentioned use the flame butterfly. The reason I think it's best to use that here is because the alternative would be to carry a torch all the way from the Salt Fort bonfire through a very perilous area and water, so heaven forbid you roll with the torch out. So my suggestion at this point is if you turn around at the other end of the little walk up to the fog gate, there is a sconce. So use your flame butterfly, light the sconce in case you die, because that way you won't have to carry a torch all the way from the Salt Fort bonfire.
Yes, which is just untenable.
Now, the advantage of having these two torches lit is when you enter into this boss arena and you take on the boss, you want to lock onto it, obviously. Mm-hmm. And if you're in darkness, which the arena is quite dark, you can't lock onto the boss for anything more than a couple of meters. And this boss jumps around quite a bit.
Yeah.
If you light both those torches, it really lights up the arena and increases that lock-on range, making the fight a lot easier, making the boss a lot easier to see, and all around just gives you a better time with this fight.
Mm.
So, enough stalling. What's the boss?
Lost Sinner. This is the first of the four old ones that Shahua was going on and on about, and actually the Emerald Herald points you at them as well. So this is the first of those. And I got to say, I mean, you seem to disagree with me on this. I found the whole thing kind of disappointing. As far as difficulty goes, I didn't think it was all that hard.
Well, interestingly, we've been saying from the beginning that we're going to do these episodes in the order of the travel screen. And to make sure that that was a viable option, this playthrough, I've been going through in that order. And so far, I haven't had any difficulty. I wouldn't suggest going through this path on your first playthrough, but the guidebook actually suggests hitting this area at soul level 95 to 105. Bugger that. You're right. It's definitely not that hard, but yeah, no, I had trouble with her. She reminds me a lot of Artorias. And to be honest, not a punishingly difficult fight or an unfairly difficult fight. To be honest, it's probably the level of difficulty I wish most bosses were at.
Yeah, I think I can pay that. I just got lucky, but I mean, Artorias, very difficult fight.
Right, but one of the most, like,
enjoyable, wonderful.
Most favorite fight.
I agree.
Dark Souls 1.
But very, very difficult, whereas I found this comparatively easier.
So, I suppose we better go into some lore about the Lost Sinner, because pretty important stuff happening here.
Yes. So, if you have a chat to Shalhua about the Lost Sinner, you discover that she tried to relight the first flame, which is something that is close to the heart of any person that's played the first Dark Souls game.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a horrible sin that now she is in a self-imposed punishment for that. So, when we see her, she's in a dungeon with chains hanging from the roof. She's wearing a steel mask and her hands are tied together. Pretty clearly, this is a kind of, she's a prisoner or she's being punished for something.
Yeah, and I think it's important to touch on something there. You keep referring to her as a she, and I think a lot of people are going to assume she's a dude. From the cutscene, it appears that she's actually got a beard, which I would say is probably just a fur collar or her hair hanging down, because she is definitely a she.
Mm.
And it's interesting because there's actually very, very strong evidence to suggest that she is actually the Witch of Izalith.
What evidence?
God, now you put me on the spot.
Oh, really? Have I?
No.
Okay.
I came prepared. Okay, so we learn from Xiaoqua that, yeah, as you said, she's punishing herself for a sin, and that sin was to relight the first flame. Now, the wording relight the first flame, it's a little off, but what we know about the Witch of Izalith is that she tried to recreate the first flame, and she failed. And in failing, she actually created the Bed of Chaos. And the Bed of Chaos is the birthplace of all demons in Dark Souls. So she has created this horrible monstrosity that's released these demons to the world through her experimentations in trying to create the first flame. And for that, that's something she feels incredibly guilty over. That's her sin. She's atoning for trying to do the right thing, but failing and causing an even worse thing.
Oh, interesting.
But that's not it. Even further than that, there's a strong theory that the Old Ones are actually imbued with remnants of the Great Lord Souls from the previous game. We had Seath, Gravelord Nido, and the Four Kings, and obviously the Witch of Izalith. Now, this is a little bit spoilerish, but as you enter into New Game Plus, we mentioned that some things change. One of those things that change is the soul items that you get off some of the bosses. And all of the Old Ones change the soul item that you get from them. I won't go into that too much further, but I will say that the Lost Sinner is the only one whose soul item actually changes to the Old Witch Soul, something that explicitly speaks of the Witch of Izalith.
Okay, that's quite cool.
Now, not only that, but when you defeat the Bed of Chaos in Dark Souls 1, the final move or blow that you make on it is to actually attack this sort of weird bug thing under the core of the tree.
Yes.
That bug thing is the Witch of Izalith. That's what she has turned into after failing with her experimentation. And kind of looks reminiscent of the weird scorpion bug thing
that crawls into the eye on the steel mask
in the cinematic as you walk into the room.
Yeah, interesting.
Very, very strong evidence that this is actually the Witch of Izalith. Not just a reference to her, not just someone continuing her work, not just another entity that has been imbued with a shard of her soul, but actually the Witch of Izalith.
That is quite cool.
Very I cool. So.
Yeah, good detective work there.
Yeah.
99.
Yeah.
So the fight itself, the Lost Sinner is a swordsman, swordsperson. hands tied together, no shield, but super fast.
Oh, another thing. You just reminded me, hands tied together. I'm sorry I've interrupted again, but you mentioned the shackles.
Yeah.
You can actually get the shackles from, I think, Morlun later on.
Uh-huh.
You can buy them off him.
After fighting the Lost Sinner?
Yes.
Okay.
And they increase your pyromancy.
It's interesting.
Pyromancy was
created by the Witch of Izalith.
Interesting. She's referred to as the godmother of pyro.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
That's
interesting. I like that. So this is an enemy that jumps around an awful lot. And like you said before, it is similar to Artorias, isn't it?
Yeah. Just her fighting style reminds me of Artorias. It wasn't quite as gripping a fight. But,
no, I agree.
You know, yeah, the jumping over your head and bouncing around and the sword sort of held in one hand. She is holding it with two, but they're bound together. Very reminiscent.
Absolutely. And after you kill her, a different message from the other bosses so far.
Mm.
Great soul embraced.
Yep.
This is a soul that you can trade to an NPC to get the Lost Sinner's sword, but interestingly, it's not strayed.
Yeah, so we've been making reference and hints to Strayed for a number of episodes now about how you'll come across this NPC where you can trade your soul items. We're going to do it again. There's another NPC where you can trade soul items a little further on the game that isn't Strayed.
Yes. So after the fight, you can open the large ornate door in the area and down some stairs, and there is a chest on the left. Inside's a fragrant branch of yore. You already know what that is. And there's an Elizabeth mushroom, which restores a lot of health over time. It's a bit like an amped up life gem. The item description says, specially treated dried mushroom creates a euphoric sensation when ingested.
Which kind of reminds me of drugs,
it's,
right?
This game's just full of, this is a drug addict's game. It's just full of drugs. Shrooms and weed and
Twilight herbs. And just, it, honestly, if we gotta start off a side business, man.
The item description says...
Continues to say.
Thank you for correcting me on that. Saint Elizabeth devoted her life to helping the needy by concocting medicine and potions. It's thought her great virtue was matched only by her sublime beauty, but who can say now?
I can say. I can. I've met Elizabeth. She's a freaking mushroom. How can anyone say she's beautiful?
Well, other mushrooms, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, oh, that makes
some interspecies shit right there. Yeah,
that makes me spore all over the place.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but it's true. Elizabeth is in the first game. She's in Darkroot Garden.
And she's a mushroom.
She's a mushroom.
Yep. So...
Is she not in Darkroot Garden?
Yeah.
Whoops.
There you go.
I'm getting my mushrooms confused. Probably it's too much Twilight herb, that's what it is.
Yeah, little correction from our secretary.
Yep.
Now, once you're done with the chest, head into a large square room with nothing in it except a bonfire. Now, interestingly, the bonfires at the end of these sort of spokes after you deal with the old ones, they all seem to be broken.
Yeah, you know, there's a sword in every bonfire.
Yeah.
This one's snapped.
Not entirely sure of the relevance there. It might just mean that you're at the end of the path and there's nowhere further to go. This is, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not sure.
I mean, I'm interested in whose swords those are. There's an awful lot of them.
Yeah. I've been wondering that since
the
first game.
And it's a very strange handguard. It's a cross-shaped handguard, which is not common. You don't see that in any other sword in the game. It's not even a common type of sword in the real world. Yeah.
Mm. Now, if you sit at this bonfire, it doesn't actually bring up a menu like most others. It just takes you straight to Majula. So it might be signifying that. Any bonfire with a broken sword, if you sit at it, you're going to get teleported straight to Majula.
Yeah. This is where you can use that sublime bone dust that you had. So don't forget that you have it. And also the dialogue will change with the Emerald Herald.
Yeah, she says, the souls and the cursed are one and the same. Your soul has grown stronger still. I hope it brings you what you wish. And into Kael's map room from here, and you'll notice that another flame has been lit.
Quite cool.
Yep, two now, if you've been following along. The Last Giant and the Lost Sinner.
Yep.
So I think that's it for this episode.
I think it is. It's been a long episode. So let's cover off the minutiae, the housekeeping, the stuff we've got to do. What's the question of the week, Church?
Nice throwback. So we started the episode with a bit of a discussion about the Lord Vessel, and that was a bit of a deviation from our usual path, but it was something that we discovered that we thought was incredibly interesting and that the community would appreciate some insight into, but we had only speculation, so we'd like to know what your take on it is.
Yeah.
What's your theory? Why do you think the Lord Vessel is there? Why do you think it was broken, and how do you think it got there?
And interestingly, this is an important point to make, is our ideas are often crowdsourced. Sometimes they're ours, sometimes we read them on forums and, you know, around the community.
Yeah, but we always pretend they're ours.
Yeah, well, we might as well. Why not? And so it's actually quite interesting to us to hear what your take is and whether you've done any research and you've read anything we haven't heard for multiple reasons. Firstly, because we love this game, but also because we want to be able to report it to the broader community. So really, if you have ideas about that or absolutely anything else, get on the horn to us and let us know.
Yeah, and despite my little quip, of course, if something of interest has been provided by one of our listeners, we'd love to do a shout out for you and let people know that, hey, Bob is the intelligent mind behind this stupid idea.
Yeah. So thank you very much for listening. We've been the Dark Souls 2. I'm Taboo.
And I'm totally Church. I'm so glad we kept that going the whole podcast.
Yep. I wonder if anyone actually noticed. I think I'm like, man, Taboo's turned into an asshole.
Church sounds really sexy.
Except in this episode. Anyway.
We'll see you all next week.
No, we won't.
The Dark Souls 2 has been a Screaming and Digital production. For show notes, please visit thedarksouls2.com or join the community at facebook.com/thedarksouls2. You can also contact us via info@thedarksouls2.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on iTunes or spread the word. Our theme tune is The Knights of Darkness by Zero Project.
The Saltfoot Bonfire and the Dragon That Flies By, we never mentioned it.
Sorry.
What's the deal? You had something to say, I'm interested.
It's not actually a dragon. It's a Belfry Gargoyle. If you kill the Belfry Gargoyles, it won't happen. If you don't kill them, it'll fly by to remind you that you should go back and kill them. Because you get to pick up the Bastille Key if you do kill them, which is useful for the area.
Oh my. How interesting is that? Just leave it in.
How?
Just like it is. Just leave it in there. Just experiment with it. You'll see. Yeah, this is me reminding future Jamian that present Jamian is wrong, and that kind of works. You'll see.